quite often I'll say to athletes, I don't want you to peak yet. Even though your coach wants you to peak, I don't want you to peak yet. You've got a long, illustrious career here. Let's just slow this thing down a bit and taking more ownership for what they want and when they want that peak to be as well.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who always wipes her chip crumbs on her pants rather than on a napkin, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 68 of the Running for Real podcast. I am really excited that you are here, and boy, do I have a good one for you today. So firstly, I'll tell you about last week. I had Jason Fitzgerald on the show, and I went over all the typical runner mistakes we make and how we can avoid them in the future. And of course, what we can do if we find ourselves in them during this moment, which we will, and it's, you know, just inevitable in our life as a runner. It should have been a helpful one for you, and especially helpful to any new runner friends that you have. Now, I know you love the sports psychology episodes, and these are the ones I tend to refer back to more than any other, because their advice is just so on point with what we need as runners. We need support, we struggle with the mental aspect, and this episode is no exception. Kim is absolutely wonderful in this episode, so helpful, and I learned a lot. I won't say too much, but I'll let Kim get into it herself. So last week, I also told you about Hoka One One's new shoe that I love, the Clifton 5, and a new app called Aptive. I think you will really enjoy the app, and hopefully by now, you know that I only bring on sponsors I truly feel will match with what you and I actually need as runners. But I just wanted to say that your support of these products, visiting the links I give you in these episodes, getting yourself a pair of Clifton 5 shoes using my code, really shows these companies that Running for Real is valuable. And if you use them, that really helps me. That shows them that, you know, I'm valuable, that it's worth investing. So these podcasts are free, but you trying out my recommendation allows these companies to keep investing in me. And as I mentioned, I intentionally choose sponsors who I believe in because I love what they're selling, and I hope you will consider trying them out too. Thank you so much in advance. Let's go meet them. This episode of the Running for Real podcast is brought to you by Aptive. Aptive provides audio-based workouts created by certified personal trainers available through a mobile app. New members get 30% off an annual membership by visiting aptive.com/running for real. That's aptive.com/running for real. That's the number for running for real. This podcast is sponsored by Hoka One One. Hoka One One is a running shoe unlike any other. You've probably seen them around the running scene. I know I had. And I wondered, would I actually like them? Well, I did. And I have a feeling you will too. Run in their newest release, the Clifton 5. It has marshmallow soft cushion and marshmallow light weight to keep you comfortable throughout the day. Kim, thank you so much for joining me on the Running for Real podcast. I always love these episodes, and from reading up on you, I am really excited to learn from you. So thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to meeting you as well.
Yeah, no, this is great. And maybe someday in the future, our paths will cross in person as well. I always love meeting people that I've interviewed on the podcast. It always just makes me feel so connected to them when we do meet in person. But for today, we're just going to be on the phone, and for everyone listening right now to our conversation. So, you know, you and I were talking before we started this episode about all your many roles that you have, all the things that you're doing, which I don't even know how you fit it all in. It's very impressive. But firstly, I want to focus on one of these, being that you are the professor of sport and exercise psychology at Wilfrid Laurier. Yeah. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Wilfrid Laurier, you got it.
Yep, university. And I just was wondering, and I know others may be wondering this, sports psychology in general, you know, that was something I wanted to do, I think, when I was 17, 18. Yeah. The university I went to didn't offer it, so that probably was a reason I didn't do it. But is it becoming more of a popular career path? And if so, is it something that you think the world needs more of? Or is it kind of becoming saturated and there's not that many, not enough athletes to kind of fill the quota of what someone would need to survive as a sports psychologist?
I think the traditional role of what a sports psychologist is definitely morphing and changing. And definitely there's a need for it now, because you need to have somebody in your corner that is very familiar with and understands the mental tools and the mental skills that you need to develop to be able to be successful anywhere. So I don't think it's a saturated market. I do think, however, there's a varying degree in people and their capabilities to actually help other individuals. So I like the time that I found it in my life. I was a professor first. I did research first. I was an exercise psychologist, very much interested in all physical activity. Then I started to expand out. I get a little bit nervous when there's individuals that say, okay, I was an athlete, and then I will take a one-year program, and that qualifies me to help individuals. Well, psychology is a very tricky subject, and you really need to have a little bit of experience and a lot of knowledge to be able to do that. But having said that, I love the fact that it's more open and accessible in all sports now. So you will find that most runners do have a support staff, that they will have a mental consultant or a performance consultant. Most teams will have a consultant. So there is more work opportunities. But what I do find is that the same people that might be taking those opportunities, you have to get a little bit of experience to make sure that you've got the knowledge that other people want to hear.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, definitely. And then, you know, related to that, you said about, you know, everyone can kind of use it. You're talking about all the way from recreational, you know, first time runners all the way up to Olympians. So tell us about how someone, you know, at maybe someone who classes themselves as a back or middle of the pack runner, how would they benefit if they're thinking, well, I don't need that. I only Olympians in the top level need that kind of thing.
Well, actually, we all come in with this genetic potential. We all come in with this ability, and then we do the physiological training that will take us to a certain point. But if we're going to put ourselves in a competitive domain, or we're going to try to do adherence or whatever our definition of success is, our mind will either increase that potential and give us that little boost that we need and facilitate it, or it's actually going to debilitate it. And really, the challenges that face a recreational runner are no different than the challenges that face an elite runner. We think that these elite runners don't go through those same obstacles and barriers that we do, but we all have doubts. We all have confidence issues. We are all balancing families and other needs and all sorts of different things. So for a recreational runner, I just say it's somebody that helps put a plan in place. If you don't have this individual, you can intuitively be very good at this yourself, but there are some individuals that are far more chaotic or random in terms of what they're trying to do. And so quite often I'm the person that says, okay, what is your definition of success? What's your action plan for that? Well, there seems to be that they're incoherent in my mind, or there's some dissonance. So how can we put those things together a little bit differently?
Could you give us an example of that?
So for example, I might have somebody, my students, for example, would be a very good example of that. So they're just starting a new transition into university, and they'll say, I want to run a marathon, a December marathon. And I quite often will say to them, I appreciate the ambition that you have, but let's look at the trajectory of your life. I want you to be successful in both ventures. So if you're stepping into two new behaviors where you're going to have to do more academic studying, but you're also going to have to do more mileage on the road, we've got a crash course here. So that's potentially not going to work out. So I'm always looking for individuals in terms of how can we make sure, can we make maybe a spring marathon or a summer marathon? What is the role going to be? And then even with my elites, it's about looking at where does a job fit into what your training is? How can we make sure that we're maximizing ourselves? Relationships. I don't want you to be so stagnant on one area of your life and advancing your running that you turn around at 35 and 37 and say, where did those other opportunities go? Mm. So I find that I'm sometimes the voice of reason, and then it's the understanding of what is it that you want to achieve? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Where are your opportunities to grow? Tell me what you want to do, and I'll help you put a plan in place and help you develop a skill set, a coping mechanism, whatever it is, a high performance psychology mentality that will help you get there.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for clearing that up and explaining that. That really interesting to think about and something I hadn't kind of considered. And what it reminded me of is actually one of the Olympians you work with, Hilary Stellingworth. Her husband Trent was on the show a few months ago, and he talked about balance and about how people think they can juggle, you know, 3-4 different focuses in their life. And I'd love to hear your take on that for, you know, those of us listening who maybe you do have, you know, like myself, have a family and you're trying to put that first. And also, you know, you have maybe a career, someone might have like a full-time job, and then they have running too. And they're thinking, well, all of those are important to me, or, you know, I can't give up the job, that I'm kind of stuck in my 9 to 5. So that's there. But what would be your take on that from the, you know, the behind the scenes kind of point of view with regards to what you just said there, whereas you have to kind of plan it and not try and do two things at once.
And sometimes it's about sequentially. So no one's going to take away the fact that running is important to you, but there are times and places to do certain things. So I always use the example that I had been running marathons, I had been doing triathlons, and I just got married. And I said to my husband, I'm ready for the next challenge in my life. We're either going to have a child or I'm going to do an Ironman. And I laugh now to think that I equated those two things. But since that time, since I've had my children, that's been my focus. So am I doing an Ironman triathlon? Not yet. So I'm a big proponent of the term yet, right? So tell me what it is. I could only have children at a certain stage, but I can do a triathlon. I can do my Ironman in my 50s when all of that is moved through. So I would say the same thing as Trent, which is the sense that we want to make sure what your priorities are, priority A, priority B, but there's always going to be sacrifices and consequences for everything that you decide to do. Make sure you're very aware that you're not losing some of those options that might be very appealing to you simply because you didn't know you were losing them by the decisions that you were making. So that's what I keep talking about, is being aware of, if we step into this 4-year trajectory where we're going to go for the Olympics, then we may have to put your education on hold. Maybe we're not going for a career. We're just going to get a job to support you at this point, right? Maybe we don't take anyone along on this chain with us right now. We just have to decide what we want to do. And new mothers are a really interesting aspect of it, is that I always say, if you're going to engage in a new endeavor, get the most joy out of it. I don't want you to feel guilty. I want you to change. You have an attractive alternative right now. It's not a barrier. It's not an obstacle. You have a very attractive alternative to spend your time with. So then running becomes a little bit different. It's more efficient. You find ways to do it with your child. You find ways to make it more social with other women. I'm a big fan of behavioral economics. So we don't give up the running, but am I running now necessarily to be able to get my best times? This is not the time for you in your life to get your best times. This is the time in your life to keep a holding place for running and the joy and the stress relief and whatever it means to you, find a way to keep that.
Oh, so good. And I'm assuming that kind of goes along with someone who's maybe made some decisions and their career is kind of taking off, you know, reaching a point where you're getting promotions. At that point, it's the same thing, you know, running may have to go on the back burner. And just, you know, I loved what you just said right there. And I 100% agree. My audience definitely know that for me, you know, I keep getting asked again and again, when are you making your comeback for running? And I'm just like, I don't know, because right now that little girl is where I want to spend my time. Like you said, it's very enjoyable. It goes so fast. But then what about someone listening who is thinking, okay, I get what you're saying, but I have my, you know, maybe I have a newborn baby and I'm going to be looking after them till I'm 18 or till they're 18. And my job isn't going anywhere because I have to support my family. So I'm always going to have those two avenues. So do I have to wait 18 years before I can really focus on this? Because, you know, I don't want to neglect my kids put my running first. So how can they kind of get their minds around that?
Then you need to make sure that you've got the supports in place for you to be able to do that, right? Okay. So equally saying that at this stage in my life, I've got a certain degree of fitness behind me. I have a lot of ambition and I've got a lot of motivation. So now it's talking with all the players in your life so that everybody's on the same page. Because again, now you're probably collectively intertwined with other individuals that are affected by your decision. So it's about talking about those things up forward and saying, and this is where some Olympians get into trouble, to be honest with you, is that they'll ask their partners and their spouses to be patient for 4 years. 4 years comes and they have this great outlook in the Olympics, and then they ask for another 4 years. Right. So you just have to really remember to be conscious of the people that need to support you so that you can do what you need to do, that it's fair for everybody. But certainly lots of Olympians, lots of elite runners are having children and coming right back from that if they've got the supports in place to do that. And the supports can be significant others. It can be financial. It can be other types of resources. But someone's got to get you out of that other responsibility of childminding so that you can do the thing that you want to do.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you so much. This is wonderful. I'm loving this conversation already. And then one more thing on that topic, just for new mothers listening to this. This isn't something I personally have struggled with too much, but I know that there are a lot of women out there who maybe have had a baby a few months ago, have been given the all clear to start running again, and then like feel like they need to get out there for their anxiety to kind of get some space from the child. I mean, Bailey, my daughter, has been a very good child, very chill. So I've been very lucky. I realized that. And so for me, I haven't felt that as much, but for someone who does has had maybe an intense time and needs that time to get out running, what would be your advice for them? Like, or even someone who is maybe having a really stressful time at work, is it okay to use running as that kind of channel to kind of release stress and get away from whatever stresses are going on in your life?
Absolutely. It should be. That's one of the biggest bonuses of moving your body in any capacity. And again, I'll reflect on my experience when my first child was born. I just ran a marathon and then essentially about 3 months pregnant still. And I was quite concerned about that. So the first thing that I got before I even had the baby was my chariot, my running stroller that I was going to have. I went out with that running stroller maybe twice before I realized this wasn't for me. I did not want to share my running with this child. I took that chariot back and I made sure that I utilized the resources that I had, which was, okay, if I have to run at 8 o'clock at night when my husband gets home, or I run at 5 in the morning, that's what I do, because my privacy, my time, my speed, I did not want to run slow pushing that chariot. I very much wanted to keep a piece of myself and my own identity in terms of what running was. And I remember feeling a little bit like, well, there's all these other women that are somehow integrating that child into their existence. And that's good too. And they were going to a lot of running classes and stroller classes with those kids. So it's about being honest about what is it that you want with your running. And I have been running my entire life, and I just really did not want to share it with anybody at that point. It was special and it was sacred to me. And it was a big point for me to stay who I actually was. So I utilized what I could and made sure that I worked around. I had to be flexible. I had to make sure that I ran at different times. And that's what I would say to new moms, is just figure out what that relationship is to you. And it might be something different at 6 weeks than it is at 1 year or a year and a half. It morphs, it changes. But just being very, very aware. We don't oftentimes sit back and say, what do I need running to be for me? Is it stress relief? Is it a time where I just get to be my former self, where I'm not responsible for another human being in this world? What does it mean? And then I can find a way to make it and contain that as I start to integrate and transition to other aspects of my life.
Love that. Love that. And then with someone maybe who isn't a new mother, but who has maybe had a death in the family or something that they're dealing with that is really stressful, is it okay to use running for stress relief in that situation? Or is it something you do need other support? It can't just be the running.
I think it can be a combination of both things. And I think if you're coping effectively through running, it's as valuable and as viable source of anything else. If you're using it for avoidance, that's a totally different thing, right? So if you're running to something, which is to run through your grief, that's a great thing. But if you're running away from something to avoid your grief, then I would not facilitate that at all. So the same entity can be many different things to different people in terms of the way they think about it and the way they utilize it. So I would never say no or yes to anything like that. It's so individually specific and contextualized. But my job is to figure out, how is that individual using it? As a coping mechanism or avoidance mechanism? Those are two very different things.
Okay, great. Well, you know, this is leading perfectly actually into the next thing I wanted to ask you about, which is, you know, once you get to know your athletes that you work with, you've kind of start to see a personality or maybe what they need. Some people might need a more kind of, you know, get out there and do what you're supposed to do kind of approach, whereas other people might need, like myself, a bit more of a fluffy, like, you can do this, you're doing great. So like how, what kind of personalities or kind of traits do you see in athletes, and what can people like kind of look for in themselves so they can know how to handle the mental side of running and staying strong in the parts that matter?
So the first thing that I really look at is, what is the go-to? So we all have patterns of behavior. We all have tells. So, for example, I'll use the example of Eric Gillis, our marathoner, and he's a very conservative individual. Well, that serves him well in the marathon because it doesn't allow him to blow up. He stays back on it a little bit. But there are certain races, there were certain decisions that he made in his life and changes and things like that, where I had to gently nudge him and encourage him outside of the box to think differently. And in fact, when he went off to the Rio Olympics, his fitness was telling him that he could do something different. And it was his third Olympic. And so the messaging for him was, if not now, when? Like, are you going to be satisfied because you've just done your third Olympics, or would you like to have something different? And so when he was on the line, it was actually quite interesting. I took a good look at his eyes and I realized he was dialed in, that he had received the message. He wanted that. His coach was also telling him the same thing. And I went to the gym and thought, okay, I'll check back with him in 2 hours. And sure enough, he finished top 10 and he did something different. He challenged himself to do something different. So some of my athletes, it might be about how do they manage outside factors? They're managing families, they're managing work, they're managing the guilt. Pressure from families to do different things. It can be their parents. It can be their spouses.
Not running, like take some, you're too obsessed with running kind of thing. Okay.
Running is a very self-involved endeavor. It is something that it can take away from other aspects in your life if you're not careful of that balance. So if you have someone in your life that is being fulfilled by some of the running avenues that they have, but it's causing dissent with the other individuals, you have to have accommodations for that. You have to make decisions. Otherwise, you could potentially lose some of those other valuable things. Mm-hmm. When I work with some of the gymnasts, for example, fear. Like, nobody wants to get on a 3-inch balance beam in front of 50,000 people and have to do a backflip. So it's about, how do you develop a healthy relationship with fear? Pain is another one. Elite runners make it look so simple, but they've developed a really healthy relationship. Don't be fearful of the pain. We use pain as feedback to say where you need to be, and it allows you to make adjustments accordingly. Sometimes it's visualization that we need to do. Some people like to have a very, very clear race plan. So I'll ask them, I'll say, what is this race for? Is it for time? Is it for placing? Is it just a good old fashioned foot race? So my job then is to really, what would you define as a success? Because everyone thinks we're so time focused. But we have to be able to develop and become better runners. We have to have races that have nothing to do with time. Sometimes they're just races that you start out as fast as you possibly can and see how long you can hold it and be ready to implode, right?
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I do. Each person has sort of a different thing. And that sort of is the joyment for me, is when I'm having a conversation with individuals, sometimes I'll say something and I can tell it doesn't resonate at all. Like, it's not hitting its mark. And I'll think, okay, I got to dance around this a little bit different. How could I say it differently? How could I present it a little bit differently? And that's the challenge to me. And that's what I've really enjoyed over the years, is to build my own knowledge base of what might be an important message, or how I could use a persuasive communication that can actually be received and actually utilized.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, this is, I mean, I'm sure it's going to frustrate the listeners, that answer, a little bit, because there is no, you know, this is what you do, this is what you do, this is, if you're like this person, you do this. But as you said, you know, that's the whole purpose of sports psychology, is, like you said, figuring out what each individual needs, what their challenges are, how they react, all that kind of stuff comes into play. And I guess it shows the importance even more of going to see someone, working with someone. And before I get on to the next part of this question, if someone is to go see a sports psychologist, if they're listening right now, is it something that most people, recreational runners, need an ongoing relationship with someone? Or is it often a case where maybe you could have a few sessions and then something, I guess, clicks, and then it's like, okay, I think I can kind of work on this stuff on my own?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing that I always do, and even though it's not formulaic, and as you said, people will get frustrated, the first thing that I do is it is an overall way of thinking more productively. So I will introduce them to the fact that the first thing that we want to do is just figure this thing out. At the end of your days, like, I'll quite often say, what's your narrative going to be? When you come, I said, I don't know if you'll make the Worlds. I don't know if you'll make the Olympic team, but I do know that someday this endeavor will be done for you. How do you want to describe that? What would you describe as a success? Are you an emotional person? Where are your strengths? Are you determined? All of those different things. So figuring it out, becoming more aware of who we are. next thing then is talking to an athlete about control the controllable, because I find that athletes are very dichotomous. They're either individuals that are looking to give blame to other people for other things that happen to their lives, or they take too much more responsibility or accountability for things that aren't theirs.
Yeah.
So then we spend a lot of time talking about, if you're a track runner, there's a reason why there's a lane in the track. No one steals your power. Take your space, right? So that individual, we really have to hit that point home. Then there's things where I talk about what do we just got to deal with in life? Because these things aren't going away. Are you funded? Are you not funded? Are you, you know, financially in a problem? Are you changing your job? Do you have a dysfunctional family right now? We all have those issues. There's always those things. So we have to just bring them into our reality. How do we cope with them? Challenges come in. How do we mobilize our resources? And then finally, it's about establishing, like, make it happen. What is it that you want to do at the end of this day? I use this Alice Davies quote, which is, tell me what it is that you will do with your one wild and precious life. Mm-hmm. And I start every talk that I do that way, because I want you to think about what it is that you want out of this world. And then if you tell me what you want, which is really hard, I can't tell you the number of athletes that sit across from me and I say, what do you want? I don't know. What are your strengths? I don't know. Well, if you don't know, how can I know? Mm. How can a coach know that's selecting you? You have to be able to step into that and be able to do it. So that would be one of the universals. And then from there, when athletes leave, I say, if you saw that this was valuable today and you'd like me to be part of your support staff, then please, by all means, let me know. But you are a capable, competent individual, and you choose and you decide. And so I work with a lot of kids and their parents. And parents will quite often say to me, okay, well, I need to come back every 2 weeks. That's you deciding that, because you want to be able to say that you've done everything you possibly can to get your son to the NHL. But let's let your son decide. Walk out that door and let him see if it's of value. So my relationship with athletes is very different. Sometimes I meet on a weekly basis face-to-face. Sometimes it's texting. Sometimes it's Skyping. Sometimes it's FaceTime. But I always let that individual decide what it is and how they want to utilize me.
That's really important and great that so many of these people that you work with, and maybe some listeners in the future, can benefit from the fact that you do care so much and you do put the individual and their needs in front of anything else. And you did mention there, I think the fourth point was about life situation. And we talked a bit about having all these stresses and how you can only really focus in on a few. But how much would that have an impact on performance if someone does have something maybe going in the rest of their life that might be kind of dealing with things? Like, I'm thinking about someone who is maybe moving house. How much is that going to affect their performance if they have a big race coming or something like that?
It's interesting, because that's so individually unique as well.
Okay.
So some people are very competent and capable of compartmentalizing. And I'll say that males are much better than that than females. Females tend to be much more emotional in all of the endeavors that they do. So if you look at all the resources that you have and the energy that you have for something, we all have this 100%. Well, for females, if we're looking elsewhere and if our life isn't copacetical, I have a lot of female runners that have a hard time getting that performance base. So with those individuals, we work really hard at getting their life copacetical and on track and organized. Once they've got that done, then they have the effort and the energy to put into the race. Right? Males are typically better about that. Sometimes I have to say to them, make them aware of the fact you do realize the consequences of the decision that you've made to do today. Because all of a sudden I'll be surprised that they've signed up for another 10K, half marathon, marathon. I'm thinking, whoa, I thought we had a conversation about where you're going. You've just thrown this in the mix. So again, it's highly individual, but it is something. If you tend to be an emotional runner, I'm an emotional runner. So what that means then is that I can definitely tell in terms of the intensity of my runs based on what's going on in the other aspects of my life. Mm. And if you're that individual, then recognizing it and knowing, how do you make that outside source more manageable so that you're not bringing that into your running? Because that, to me, is one of the biggest injustices. If you sacrifice or you devote 1 hour of time for your run and you don't get out of it what you needed to, which might be an emotional boost, confidence boost, physical fitness, and we carry something in with us, then we haven't done running right. Mm. So we have to manage the outside of our life a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you so much. Great way of putting things. You definitely have a knack for this, being able to put it across in a way that makes total sense.
Oh,
and,
good.
One thing that I, read about you, and it kind of leads on from what we were talking about there, is you know, you've said that for your athletes, for the Olympians and other athletes in between, you've said that if you've done your job correctly, you shouldn't need to be on site watching the athlete. Why, how is that the case for someone who's thinking, yeah, but that's the time I need the most is, you know, just before the race. So why is someone going to be okay for the race if you've done your job correctly?
You know, it's interesting because I think I'm about the only one in my profession that actually says that, because there's lots of individuals that like to travel and do these different things. One of the greatest compliments that I got, first of all, was from one of my athletes that said, I really enjoy working with you because you don't take ownership of my successes and you don't blame me for my failures. You care just enough. And that's the point that I am not a massage therapist. In my mind, I'm not a medical doctor. Those are the individuals that should be on site. You've got a tight calf. You need that type of help. If I've done my job right, we have discussed everything in my office. You have an arsenal of tools upon which to get yourself out of any situation that you find yourself. Now, having said that, there are so many times where I text with individuals, we FaceTime before a big event, and I feel such a privilege to be some of the last, or usually the last person that they talk to before they go out there. But I also understand that this athletic journey, I want these skills to be transcendental. I want them to be for daily life skills later on. And athletes can be dependent. They can look for someone to solve their problems. I want them to develop that skill themselves. You know, they're fast, they're strong, they can do everything physically, stretch themselves mentally. So if that means that you're over in Rio and you have to figure out how to build your confidence because you're sitting there in the ready room and all of a sudden it dipped down a little bit as you looked at your competition, that is growth, that's resilience, and that's hardiness. Mm-hmm. So I want that for my athletes. I want them to feel challenged and I want them to know that they've got the resources themselves to be able to utilize that.
Yeah.
But having said that, I do like to be part of the support team. I just don't want them to be dependent on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so true. And I definitely have found the same thing with Evie, my sports psychologist, same thing. You know, she was one of the last people I spoke to on FaceTime, but like you said, you are prepared. You have kind of all the scenarios playing out. And do you see like a look in someone's eye if you feel like they're ready? Like, how do you know if they're ready? Or is it, again, something that's different? Some people will kind of go into themselves. Some people kind of joke around. How do you know if someone is ready to run well?
Well, I can usually tell when they leave my office. Everybody has some tells in terms of what they say, but athletes are very good at saying what they know you want to hear, right? So sometimes it's about cutting through that aspect of it and saying, I know you think this is what you should say at this point, but this is not where you are. I can tell that's where you are. So I can look in people's eyes. I can look at the way they dress. One of my big tells is if runners wear hats or not. So when they usually have a hat pulled down really low, it usually mm-hmm. means that they're very introspective in terms of what they do. When they're on the line, they know this. I don't like when they wear sunglasses because if I get a good look at their eyes, I can usually tell if they're on or if they're not on. So they wear their sunglasses so their opponents won't know it. But then I said, I can't see it either. Mm-hmm. So yeah, everybody has a tell. And I start to recognize patterns too. And one of the patterns that I recognize kind of universally is that before individuals go to do something really big, it can be big as your first 5K or it can be big as your first world championship. Generally, about 2 weeks before they have to travel, they will come into my office and I call it the old crap moment, right? Because all of a sudden they're like, I can't do this. I just don't think I can. I have fallen. My foot doesn't work, all of this. And I've come to realize that it's a real psychological coping mechanism because it's such a safe space. It doesn't happen to them when they're in their over on the trail or at the race. It doesn't happen to them when they're at the Olympics. It happens in this safe space where they know that we can sit down and we can deal with it. So it really is something that I've really learned about in terms of patterning. It doesn't throw me anymore. And now I'm able to assure the athlete, oh, great, we're going through this normal mechanism that most athletes go through when they're doing something of significance to them. We're doing the worst case scenario. Let's do it. Let's do it right here in my office, so that we can check this off and not worry about it as we go forward.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You are very much on the same kind of track as Evie as well, which I love hearing this. And I know, I see how powerful it is with myself. And with planning, like, can you kind of peak someone too early with their mental preparation? And, you know, is there kind of planning that goes into this, or does it kind of naturally align with the ebbs and flows of training and the way their tapering is going, that it kind of naturally allows it to go the way it should?
There's two things I'll answer that. Sometimes it doesn't naturally go. Sometimes physiologically, if they've got a training program, I find that they actually peak a little bit before they should. So then it's about giving them the permission to not work at that level so that they can make sure that they maintain that energy that's going to be necessary for that big event that's coming out. Right? The other thing that I would say about that is that really when we get ready for things, we have our emotions, our behaviors, and our thoughts. And very rarely are all three of those completely congruent. So quite often then I'll have athletes that are just stomping at the bit. They can hardly wait. They want to run that marathon tomorrow. We've still got a month to go. And in that case, then I'll say, you're not there soon, but not yet. Right. So let's bring it back. Let's dial it back because I don't want you to be just so energy fatigued as well. Because emotionally, if you're constantly thinking about it, that can be exhausting too. I use it as the same thing as if you were running on the spot just slowly for 24 hours a day, think of how fatiguing that would be. And if you're using your brain for 24 hours a day, you think about how you're draining that resource too. So I always start with a pyramid, which is on the bottom line, I don't want you to get specific yet. I want you to enjoy your Netflix. I want you to do all those things, go out with your friends. And I'll say to them, this is an opportunity for you. You're building your really solid base. That means that you're social. That means you do your job well and you start doing your training. And then we start peeling off, pruning, taking some of those things away so that we can start to get to that top of that pyramid exactly the time that they need to do it. So generally, it's like when they come to me, do we have a month? Do we have a week? Do we have 4 years? How long do we have to do that? If it's scouts in terms of looking for the professional leagues, when are the scouts coming out? And talking to them about a big deal is you're not trying to show perfection. You're trying to show potential. What does potential look like? Holding them back a little bit too. And quite often I'll say to athletes, I don't want you to peak yet. Even though your coach wants you to peak, I don't want you to peak yet. You've got a long, illustrious career here. Let's just slow this thing down a bit and taking more ownership for what they want and when they want that peak to be as well.
I love that. And again, showing how much you are putting the athlete first, even sometimes, you know, butting heads maybe a little bit with the coach, and that puts you in a tough position, but you care about the athlete and want them to have a long career, as you mentioned. So good for you for actually kind of sticking to your guns and saying what you think is best for the person. So I really admire that. And
oh, good.
Moving on with just some questions that I know the listeners will be wondering about. So many of my listeners get very nervous before races. You know, they might be ready physically, but they get scared, you know, worry about messing up. You know, I actually recently last year got to experience something where I went to a marathon with some friends who were recreational runners, one was trying to break 3:30, I think, and the other one was trying to break 4. That's Anna and Morgan.
Great.
If you're listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were both incredibly nervous, like to the point they were shaking. And I thought, I said to them, you're more nervous than I was. Like, I would never have been as nervous as you are right now. And then, you know, the same with Olympians. They obviously get a little bit nervous, but not kind of to the level that many recreational runners get to. But despite these Olympians have money on their head, they have medals on their head.
Yeah.
So how do you get people to kind of remove that nervousness? And what would you say if they do tend to get incredibly nervous on race morning?
Okay, well, the first thing I would say is that some nerves are good, right? We want that adrenaline kick in. That's what's going to give us that little bit extra edge. So we don't want to be afraid of it. But sometimes nervousness becomes anxiety, and anxiety is fear-based. So there's no point to be feeling that there's fear based here. If you've done the work, you've done the work. I think the number one mistake that recreational athletes make is that they start getting ready for the race when they're getting up that morning and they're driving to the race and they're starting to think about it. So what happens is it escalates. So when I do competition prep with the athletes, we start usually about 4 or 5 days in advance. And it starts with some visualization. What is the visualization? The visualization is, how are you going to feel in the morning? How are you going to feel when you're driving? How are you going to feel when you're starting to get ready for that race? Always let your emotions go up, bring yourself back down with control. So you actually visualize yourself using your breathing techniques to bring yourself down. Mm-hmm. And it's that same pyramid effect. As we start to get closer, then we start thinking about the race itself. But it's always about the preparation for the race. and understanding that, yes, we're going to have some nerves. I want that for you. I want a life that you're going to live that does make your palms sweaty, because it means you're doing something of value. So getting really comfortable in the uncomfortable, but also knowing, like you identified with your friends, when you're starting to shake and you're now asking your body to do something physiological, that shake is taking something away from the strength that you have. So now we have to use the warm-up in a different way. The warm-up, people use that physically, and I'll say to them, so when you start to warm up physically, what you're trying to do is loosen up your muscles and get them ready to run the race. Emotionally, we do a lot of techniques too, and psychologically, so that when you do get out of the car and you're completely elevated, I want after that warm-up, that mental warm-up, you've taken yourself someplace else too. So you've now lowered yourself through your deep breathing, through your self-talk, through your visualization. Centering is a big thing. So calming applications, all of those different things. In terms of, you have to be your own constant. And I want you to know what your constant state is in terms of energy release, whether you're running in your own backyard, whether you're doing a training run, or whether you're running in a performance. And that comes with just training and utilizing it. And we practice those techniques so that when you get there, you're able just to execute.
Okay.
But again, I guess my big thing that I would say is start 5 days, 4 days beforehand. Visualize, like I ask them, where do you feel your most nerves? Some people, when they get up in the morning, some people don't sleep the night before. I don't care where it is. I don't care what it is. But what I care about is that you're always going to visualize yourself calming yourself down and taking control of that emotion and taking it back to a productive point.
Mm-hmm. Love that. And visualization is incredibly powerful. I know I've talked about that many times, so I'm glad to hear you utilize that as well. And yeah. And what about someone listening who's saying, okay, that's great, but you know, I do have a lot of pressure on me. You know, I don't get many chances to race. I really want to run a BQ. What would you say to that person who, you know, is maybe feeling that pressure and not able to remove it from themselves, even with the visualization, thinking, I just have to do this. I have kids. I only get one chance a year. What would you say?
Well, first of all, that is not a productive way of thinking about things. I know that she wants that. Like when people tell me they want to win, I say, yes, I know you want to win. You wouldn't have come to me if you don't want to win, right? I know you want to do your best. So we don't need to talk about that. I want to talk about the how. Tell me how you're going to do your best. So for that individual, I would say, are you running a 5K? The first K then is basically for you to find your grounding. What I want you to say to me is, my first K is I'm going to find my center. I'm going to make sure that I don't go out. I'm not going to go with adrenaline, because adrenaline is a false friend. I'm not going to get up there. I'm going to make sure I'm clear about where I am. I might just use my watch. So that's my definition of what the first K of the first 5K is all about. What's the middle of the race? Well, there's some hills coming up. Okay, so I'm a good hill runner. So I'm going to utilize my ability to run hills to maybe make some time here to be able to do this. Then at the end, where's my kick? How is my fitness? What am I going to do? So I stay away from, like, you know, so many times people say, I want to make it to the Olympics. Well, so do I, right? It's a no-brainer. We all do. But what I want to hear from you is, how are you going to do that? If you tell me the action plan or the behavioral strategy, that's what we can work with. So accepting it. So just dealing with it. Yes, I feel that this is something that's so important, so valuable to me. Acknowledging that, yes, what is the cost of this being so valuable to me? Well, the cost is that if I don't get the outcome that I want, I may have to deal with my own disappointment. Mm-hmm. And that really is a worry for a lot of runners, because dealing with the emotions that come afterwards, can I deal with it? Have I dealt with it before? Yes. Check it off, then it goes. So now let's talk calmly and clearly and coherently about what this run is going to look like for you, because there's only one way to get to that thing that you want, and it's through my way. And that's about developing this succinct race plan. So we're both on the same page, but just saying it over and over again is really a useless use of energy, really. So it's about the action plan to do it.
Love that. Cool. Thank you so much. And then related to that, this is going to be my final question before we get to the running for a 4. What about someone who has had a DNF, did not finish, has had a bad race, and really having a hard time moving on, you know, feel like they wasted an opportunity? How can you get to the point where you don't go into the next race thinking, well, it has to be today because I didn't perform last time?
Okay, so one of the things is I talked about the fallacy of things being dependent, but not dependent in any sort of way, right? So we have another opportunity and another chance. So things that happen to us can either be really these great treasures that push us forward that we can learn something from, or they can be anchors that hold us back. And we have to decide, we have to make a conscious choice. So in those situations, I sometimes give people a watch and I say, here's the thing. You ran that race. You had a bad outcome. It was a one-off. It was a bad race. It happens to people. When you step into the running world, you have to be able, first of all, I ask them, can you accept the high highs and the low lows? And if they say yes, then I remind them, this is a low low for you. You told me you could accept it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to put a nice time limit on this, because I'm with you. You are disappointed. I like disappointment. I like frustration. That's our first reaction, but we can't stay there because that would just grind us down. How will I use that information for my positive response? Well, the reason why I am disappointed or frustrated is because I think I can do better. That's great. So use it to build your confidence. What does doing better mean? Where do I think that I showed some weaknesses? Where are my opportunities to grow? And that's what you got to think about as the runner too. So say, where are we going to get those seconds? Is it going to be at the start of the race, the middle of the race, the end of the race? What wasn't successful in this last one? And so quite often I'll say to them, you've got tonight to figure this out. You are in the reaction stage. Enjoy it. Have a good old pity party. I want you, if you think you're down, you're going even farther down, right? Let it out. Let it all be. But by the next time we talk at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, I want you to have already started about what your response is going to be. How are you coming back and learning from this for this next race we have on Saturday? So sometimes I feel like I take a really tough approach with these athletes, but they're capable of it. They're very capable of it. And I just don't want them to stay somewhere that could be debilitating when they have so much more potential, if they can just contextualize what that experience was so that they can move on and move forward with it.
So would that be a good idea to maybe write down kind of what went wrong or what you did and what you can improve from there?
Absolutely. And one of the exercises that I do have with runners is even before they run the race, I have them write me an email about what they plan to do in the race. Oh, yeah. And I say to them, okay, this is write the email that when I check back with you and say, how did the race go? All you've got to do is hit send. And it's a really nice exercise. Mm-hmm. It's usually about 95%. But if the race doesn't go the way it should, then what I have them do is underneath that email, now tell me why those things didn't happen. What was under your control? What will you change very specifically for the next one? Right? So it's just always a way, because if not, they would just stay in that disappointment. But now we're always being very productive about moving forward, using that experience to change something for the next time.
Okay, cool. And could someone in theory send that to themselves if they were going to try
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. And the runners absolutely love it because it makes them sit down and think about the race plan to really talk about what am I going to do? And I do it with all sports, actually, and it really makes them contextualize and really plan about what it is that they plan to do that day.
That's great. That's cool. Thank you so much. This is so interesting.
Oh, you're
welcome. Lots of learning and lots of actionable things that people can actually take to do. So we're just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, Hoka One One and Aptiv, and we'll be right back. This episode of the Running For Real podcast is brought to you by Aptiv. Aptiv provides audio-based workouts created by certified personal trainers available through a mobile app. What does that mean you get? Well, access to expert trainers, a flexible audio workout format so you can work out the way you like, and I've told you over and over again how important it is to listen to your body. The Aptiv trainers have a wide array of personalities so you can find the personal training style that motivates you. You know I love the gentle, be kind to yourself approach, but maybe that doesn't work for you. What is even cooler is that Aptiv's in-house music production team creates music playlists that are perfectly timed to the intensity and pace of your training. When you need a boost, the music keeps you going. When you need to back off, the music dials back with you. Aptiv also has a 5K, 10K, half and full marathon training program. And for future mamas out there, there's a full maternity program broken down by trimester so you can work out and build strength for a healthy pregnancy. Pretty cool, huh? Subscriptions start at $14.99 billed monthly or $99.99 for an annual membership. But for a limited time, new members get 30% off an annual membership by visiting aptiv.com/runningforreal. That's aaptiv.com/runningforreal with the number 4. This podcast is sponsored by Hoka One One. You probably know, at the beginning of this year, I had a whole new world open up to me to try out other shoes. There was only one brand, though, I really wanted to try. Mostly because I was curious. Were they actually comfortable? Did they feel weird? Was there any chance I'd actually like them? Especially when I'd always been someone who'd gone for minimalist shoes. So I got myself a pair of Hoka One One Clifton 4 shoes, and I decided to do the one thing I tell runners almost on a daily basis never to do. Go out for a longer run in a new pair of shoes. The first time, I should add, I had worn a different brand of shoes in 4 years. But you know what? I ran for over an hour and they felt amazing. They were surprisingly comfortable, smooth and light. I love them, and now I'm really excited about the newly updated version, the Clifton 5. They have marshmallow soft cushion and marshmallow light weight to keep you comfortable throughout the day. They're even better than the 4, and I'm telling you, if you haven't tried a pair of Hoka One One shoes, if their unique design has put you off, well, give it a go. And maybe, like I found, you'll be surprised that you absolutely love them. Use the promo code RUNNINGFORREAL, that's the number 4, on hokaoneone.com for free expedited shipping and become part of the family. It's time to fly. All right, Kim, 4 more questions for you, starting with a unique nutrition tip or something that you use in your training.
It's not unique at all, but the bottom line is that when I train, I love to engage in things that are joyful. And for me, after I run, not all the time, but I will engage in a nice big glass of milk and peanut M&Ms. And that is my joy.
That peanut M&Ms, not peanut butter, right?
No, peanut M&Ms.
In the yellow packet. If they are yellow in Canada, but yellow in the US.
They are yellow
okay,
too.
Cool. Well, good choice. Nice choice of candy there. What about a running for real moment for you, a moment that only runners will understand?
I've had many running moments. I just had one recently. So it was interesting. So for me, in my fast days were before my children. And so I ran a lot of marathons, 5Ks, and I would do extremely well. When I had my children, I decided that their fitness was as important to mine. So I was going to have to slow down to make sure that they sped up. And so we spent a lot of time together. And so last year, I decided that I would go in a 5K snowshoe race at the mountain that we have a chalet at. And I have not really run in my snowshoes much. So I've done lots of races, lots of orienteering on my snowshoes, and I decided to put them together. And when the race started, I didn't know, because I just signed up because we were members at this hill, that it was actually the national championship for Canada for the snowshoe team. And when we were running, I was running with my husband, and I was starting to utilize some of the things that I had told people about utilizing in terms of find your relationship with pain, make sure that you're dealing with the issues that you can, keep your confidence. And I just had a really great run that day and ended up coming in third and being on the national Canadian snowshoe team. So it was just a really nice, amazing, nice thing. Yeah, congrats. It really was. And it was one of those where I came in under fitness, under trained, but really utilized everything I could psychologically to not talk myself out of that race, but to lean into it and stay into it. So really push the potential of what I had that day.
Love it. That's so cool. Well, congratulations. Yeah, that's exciting.
Thank you.
Great. And what about a high moment for you? Was that it?
That was a high moment for me. I've had lots of really fun times with running too. When I think about some of the high moments is with my husband. So when we first started dating, he was not a runner. And so I was introducing him to the longer distances and the marathons and some of the really fun moments that we've had. So we've had races. I've had races where I run to compete, and then I've had races where we just run socially. And there was one moment where he doesn't like to carry anything as we run. And so I was carrying his liquid energy, and I had one packet on one side and one on the other side. And I knew very early in the race that I had dropped one, that I had lost one. And so when we got to the time where we needed it and he asked me for it, I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I've lost yours." And then he said, "Well, how do you know that you've lost yours?" And I said, "Well, I'm pretty sure it was because I kept mine." So it was the most illogical conversation that we had. And I just remember a woman being on the sidelines, handing us a banana and saying, "That should solve it." So clearly we were been such a heated debate about who was going to have this liquid gel. And so lots of great moments like that with him. And he's a massage therapist. I can remember we were running the St. John's marathon, and the last point was over a big hill, and my calf started to cramp, and he was so lovely. And he said, "Oh, just a second, I'll massage it for you so we can do this last 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers." And so he did. And then I took off and finished, and I turned around and looked, and he was still on the ground because he couldn't get back up because he had stopped in the middle of his run. So those are just some really nice moments that he and I think about all the time, where we shared this passion together. Mm-hmm. And again, we weren't trying to break any speed records. We were just honestly trying to enjoy it together. Yep. And we did.
And giving you lots of good stories to share as well.
Exactly.
Cool. Thank you. And then finally, what do you tell yourself when you're standing on the start line of a race?
When I'm starting, Mark Tewksbury was one of my favorite athletes. He's a Canadian swimmer. And he said one time when he looked around in the call room for swimming, the ready room for swimming, I believe it is, he said, "Why not me? Somebody has to win this race today. Why not me?" And I say that quite a bit of the time, which is, why not me? Somebody here has to take up, and someone has to lean in. Someone has to take up the challenge. Why not me? I'm as confident. I'm as capable. I'm as prepared as anybody else standing here today. So why not me?
So cool. Great. Thank you so much. And something people definitely can take in and use it themselves. So Kim, where can people find out more about you, and tell us if you are looking for clients yourself to take on, if someone wants to take you up on it?
The best place to get a hold of me is I have my website called mindtoachieve.ca, so they can find me on my website. I'm also on Twitter.
Number two, mind
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Achieve.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. And I also have Twitter, Mind to Achieve. And then there's also my work address, which is just kdawson@wlu.ca.
Okay, great. Well, I encourage people to go find Kim, follow along with what she's doing and learn from her. Maybe work with her if you are interested. And Kim, thank you so much. This was so insightful,
really
enjoyable. And I think our listeners are going to love it too.
It was the joy of my day too. So thank you for offering this opportunity.
Oh, I just love these episodes so much. And Kim gave us another take on those pre-race nerves and beating ourselves up. You know, the scenarios we find ourselves in often where we are not having the 1 in 100 race that we hope we will have, that dream race. This will hopefully help you to move on and kind of accept where you are at. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll save it for future listening and pass it along to any friends that you might have who are interested in sports psychology, because I love it. I think it's one of the best topics to be talking about. You can find links to everything we talked about today in the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode68. And remember, if you check out the links I mentioned in the podcast for my new sponsors, Hoka One One with their wonderful Clifton 5, which I wear and love, by the way, and Aptiv for giving you a personal trainer to motivate you through your training. And in case you missed it, they do also have 5K, 10K, half and full marathon plans, if you need those. There are links in my show notes if you need those, or just, you know, visiting the links I mentioned /runningforreal. That will get you straight there from their website. Thank you so much for supporting me. I truly appreciate it. So next week I will have Jared Ward back on the show. I'm not sure if you remembered the previous episode I did with Jared, but it's one of my favorites of all time. I refer to it often. You are gonna love him. Until then, have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.